Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our subject is CrossFit. There's a great new book just out on the subject of the CrossFit revolution, Learning to Breathe Fire. For those of you unfamiliar with CrossFit, it is a new style of exercise, an exercise craze that is sweeping the country. And J.C. Hertz has recently documented its evolution and described what it's all about in a new book. So, J.C., take us through what a typical CrossFit workout might entail. What's it like?
So people get to the gym. Some of them know what the workout's going to be. Some of them don't. They might not have checked the night before, or they might be too frightened to check. So
it's like, surprise me.
Surprise me, exactly. I feel lucky. So you have a warm-up, typically 5 to 7 minutes, and that could involve a sprint out the door to the stop sign and back, and some, you know, push-ups, some burpees or pull-ups.
And what is a burpee for the uninitiated?
Oh, a burpee. So you go down to the floor, you do a push-up, and then you stand up and you jump and you clap above your head.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of like a Marine, drill instructor kind of thing.
Yeah, like an old style calisthenic.
Mm-hmm.
So then the instructor will typically explain the movement, and this could be a technical explanation of how a particular lift is done, or a series of movements. And once everyone understands what the workout is, there's a big clock, and the coach says, 3, 2, 1, go, and you're off. And it's timed, so everyone's trying to do workout in the minimum amount of time, or else they have a certain amount of rounds they have to get through, and they're timing themselves, or there's a fixed amount of time and you have to do as many reps as possible, as much work as possible in a fixed amount of time, as many reps as possible. That's called an AMRAP in CrossFit. So
right, I notice actually, excuse me, that they, one of the things that helps people can sometimes do this on their own, and they use apps that show the exercise and that time the exercise. Because I notice that sometimes, when my stepson comes out to visit me, out at the beach, he'll do a CrossFit workout, but he'll take his iPhone out and he'll press a button, and it gives him like a timed thing, it shows him how many reps to do, and he'll try and do as many of certain things, like using kettlebells or something like that.
Sure.
And do as many as he can in a given amount of time.
Right. So it's usually a combination of movements. And people, you can get caught up in how these workouts are composed. But basically what you're doing is you're doing a variation of complex movements as intensely as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's very different from, I'm just going to get on the bike at 65%.
Yeah.
Or, just the regular, what most people call cross training, where, you're taking little breaks in between. Because you are going for it. I mean, you are going all out, which is not an experience that most people have or are used to.
Uh-huh.
And even that, it has, it resonates on multiple levels. It's physically difficult.
Right.
It's psychologically difficult. It's uncomfortable. And part of the training is the mental toughness to understand that you're in a place that just kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And you're going to be there until the work is that you're going to get it done. And knowing you can do that also spills out into other areas of your life. So first responders, the firemen and the Navy SEALs and soldiers, they all do this. But for a normal person to know I am my own first responder, right? I know that if I ever encounter some kind of physical crisis, I will be ready to do what needs to be done. That builds a whole other level of confidence that spills over into people's non-athletic lives.
Right. So this immediately brings up a consideration, which is actually one of the criticisms of CrossFit, which is that for newbies or people who aren't in the best shape, either musculoskeletally or from a cardiovascular standpoint, that it's potentially dangerous, that there are a lot of injuries that can occur. People get overzealous. They overtax themselves, and this, they can have, muscle tears. They end up in sports medicine offices. There are these places are everywhere these days in major metropolitan areas where people practice CrossFit. And it also suggests that maybe this is something that's exclusively for the young. You know, that if you're 25 or 35, fine. But, you know, for, you know, older people who want to maintain fitness, stay away from CrossFit. Is that a misnomer?
I think it is. I mean, my own experience, I got into CrossFit, my husband pulled me into it, and he got into it because he went to a YMCA boot camp with some trainer, not CrossFit, some accredited certified trainer running a boot camp who had people jumping up and down with 45-pound plates. My husband ruptured a disc.
Oh, goodness.
And so, yeah, so he decided after they, you know, cut out the piece that was impinging on his spinal cord, that he wanted to make his core so strong that this would never happen again, because as he says, I know what 10 is on the pain scale. It's when you want someone with a brick to crack you over the head with it and put you out of your misery.
Yeah.
So he started CrossFit as a way of building core strength.
I see.
And a lot of people do that. I've seen a lot of older people doing CrossFit, and there's a concept of relative intensity, right?
Yes.
Someone who's a 65-year-old lady is not going to the CrossFit Games.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen plenty of them doing, they don't jump on the box, they step on the box.
Mm-hmm.
But for them, stepping on the box, you know, that revs them up.
Mm-hmm.
And there are effects that go beyond, you know, your weight. I mean, people's blood lipid levels are changing.
Yes.
You know, people's glucose is coming out into control. So it's true, and this is especially true with, you know, I would say guys who used to be athletes who are now in their 40s, who are willing to, you know, not pay attention to the coach and, you know, want to be competitive with the fire breathers. If you do not master the movements and you want to run with the big dogs, you'll probably mess yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a presumption that we're adults and that we're going to listen, we're going to learn, and we're going to use our judgment, which is really what people do in sport, as opposed to fitness, right? And there's this whole interesting chapter of the book that's about how we think about risk, depending on whether we're framing it as sport or fitness, right? No risk is acceptable in fitness, right? In
the
gym, if someone got hurt, that, you know, an instructor would be fired.
Right, the liability, yada, yada, yada.
But sport, if you think about the risks that we tolerate in sport, whether you're talking about getting on a bike or, you know, and anything where the foot does not make direct contact with the ground, like skiing, tobogganing, motorcycle. I mean, you're just one skid away from orthopedic catastrophe. And yet, we embrace these activities, and we encourage our children to do them, because we view so much benefit from sport. And I think that this is, regardless of where you are on the continuum about risk, this is a very, very interesting discontinuity in our idea of risk. Oh, it's sport, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Fitness, never.
Well,
and
I think
it goes to what is it about sport that makes it so valuable?
I think it's an effort to recapture an element of heroism in our rather controlled and prosaic lives. Because, as you say, you know, sometimes the people who engage in this, you know, have very measured and controlled lives, maybe lives that are full of stress and tension, but more emotional and you know, professional stress, and their physical lives are sort of cloistered and cushioned from, you know they are, live in temperature controlled homes, you know, drive in cushy air conditioned cars, and maybe they're looking for that element of challenge and adventure that's you know, kind of draws them back to their primal roots.
Well, then also skill. Right, because this is something we admire about athletes, real athletes in sports, is it's not just that they're strong, it's that they're coordinated and they know how to do something really, really well. Like when we watch basketball and you see what virtuosos can do in basketball, it takes our breath away because there's an element of virtuosity and skill that you don't get on a gym floor, right, because those movements are so neurologically impoverished. And that's something that when you get into CrossFit, which, you know, it has many elements of sport, right, versus exercise, the ability to do certain things, even if it's just a pull-up, but it might be, you know, a snatch or a clean and jerk or a back squat or a handstand push-up or a muscle-up on the rings. And there's something about learning how to do something new and becoming competent at it, not just in athletics, but, you know, people want, they learn how to play musical instruments and they get tremendous satisfaction from their progression in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of progression of, yes, I can do something that I couldn't do last month.
It's a form of mastery.
Yes.
Now, so the term HIIT, high-intensity interval training, is something that's being repopularized in exercise, which is the notion of, you know, you can be on the elliptical for 40 minutes and, you know, get, you know, look at your pulse rate, and your pulse rate is, you know, 150% of your baseline pulse rate, and that's a form of, you know, get a little bit of a workout and you burn some calories. But HIIT seems to be a theme in CrossFit, which is high intensity interval training. You're really stepping it up a notch, and then having a recovery period and then resuming.
Right. Well, and there's a big chapter in the book where I go into the science of this, because I personally hate it when people say, you know, this kind of exercise or diet is great, and I'm not going to tell you biologically why. Just believe me.
Yeah.
So I went into some of the peer-reviewed university research on high-intensity interval training, and, you know, this isn't something funded by some supplement manufacturer.
Yeah.
This is real science. And one of the most fascinating studies, there were two groups, and they were both on ergonomic bikes, right, so the calorie-reading bikes. And one group did about 40 minutes at 65% intensity, which is still working, right? But that's what most people do at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And another group did 20 minutes of intervals where they went as hard as they could for 12 seconds and then at moderate for 20 seconds, and they just cycled through like that.
Mm-hmm.
They did it for 20 minutes half the time. They got the same calorie readout on the bike because they were doing more work in less time. And they lost 9 times the fat.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, that should really be an incentive to consider something like this.
Because the hormonal effect, right? When you go above 90% of your max, your body starts releasing human growth hormone.
Yeah.
Because it says you've been in a fight. You need to lose fat and build muscle. Otherwise, you will not survive and reproduce.
Right. So, it is a stress response. So I guess what you could say is that if you do the same exercise day in and day out, it's as if your body adapts to it and sort of like, okay, I'm okay with this, and I can kind of maintain my weight. And, you know, it's almost like steady state equilibrium metabolism. But if you actually apply stress, it's a little bit like that old adage, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and your body adapts in a good way.
Yeah, it does, and it triggers off, it's the hormonal effect that makes you lose the fat, and it's like this in exercise, but it's also this way in diet, as we're finding out. It's not necessarily the calories in, calories out, right? It's the hormonal effect of things like insulin in your blood that affects your body composition. So there's more to the story, and being able to explore the science of this was actually one of the most delightful parts of the book research, because, you know, just being able to core in and then find a way to explain this for an everyday person. I've had athletes tell me that before they read this 1,200-page passage on biomechanical pathways, they did not know how ATP worked.
Mm-hmm. And that's all in the book, Learning to mm-hmm. Breathe Fire. That's one of the chapters. So help us out with the relationship between this and the so-called paleo movement or paleo lifestyle. And we talk a lot about paleo diet, a diet which is the diet of our ancestors. What makes CrossFit sort of paleo, and why is it appealing to people following a paleo program?
So one of the big themes in CrossFit is you want to get back to basics. You want to go into this sort of primal fitness. And so the paleo diet is very cultural, resonant with this. And the paleo diet is really interesting because there's some good science to say if you lower the glycemic load of your diet by getting rid of processed foods, that's healthy. But that's not why people stick to it. The reason they stick to it is that the paleo diet is more or less a religious nutritional taboo, right? So the CrossFitters say, oh, we're paleo.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's keeping kosher or halal, the reason why it's so easy for people to stick to it is that when they do, they affirm that I'm a member of this group, not that group.
So it's actually an identity thing in a way. It's absolutely
about identity and going out into the office and knowing you're a CrossFitter and knowing all your friends back there aren't eating the pizza except maybe mm-hmm. on a cheat day.
Right.
And, you know, when the donuts go around, it's an identity thing of my people do not eat
right.
this.
So in other words, if you know, you're as a CrossFitter, you're not going to be caught dead, you know, sitting in the office cafeteria with a low fat Yoplait, you know, for lunch.
No. I mean, that's like a rabbi eating pork rinds. It's not going to happen.
Okay, so you're not going to fall for the low fat hype. You're actually a CrossFitter is more likely to have grass fed meat. Organ meat, lots of fresh
butter.
Fruits and vegetables, maybe bulletproof coffee for breakfast, something like that.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is the trade-off, right, is so you get rid of sugar, you get rid of refined carbs, but sort of in return, what you get back in your life is fat.
Mm-hmm.
And what I call in the book, heretical amounts of it, right? So you look at CrossFitters and the amount of fat, tasty fat that they're actually eating. And people who are on low-fat, high-carbohydrate diets, their eyes just pop out because they say, well, I would weigh 250 pounds if I ate like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably would. But fat doesn't necessarily make you fat if
Indeed.
Your body is metabolizing and using that fat as fuel.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here on Intelligent Medicine because that's one of our continual themes on this program, and we'll be talking to I don't know her first name, but Teichholz, who wrote the new book, A Big Fat Surprise,
that's right.
Next month. And, you know, that book is sort of the anthem of the saturated fat backlash where we kind of are demolishing the myth of low-fat diets.
Well, and it's also
Nina Teichholz is her name.
I mean, there's in the CrossFit culture, there's this whole thing about primal satisfaction, right? You know, that sense of victory when you've finished a wad, and the same with food. Full fat Greek yogurt, it's really tasty on the lips. It's pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of finding pleasure and understanding how like intensely pleasurable everyday ordinary things can be. It's back to some of the kind of primal and satisfying human experiences of movement, of eating, of being part of a pack. And that's what part of what makes this so inspiring, as well as these kind of mythic,
mm-hmm.
kind of epic sports writing sagas of the CrossFit Games.
Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty because, you know, if you remember the movie American Beauty, I know that was a long way back, and you're pretty young, but I think it was 1999. Kevin Spacey in American Beauty, he's embarking on his exercise program, and there's a couple guys in the neighborhood who are experienced exercisers, and he wants some advice on exercise. So they say, what are you looking for? Are you looking for strength or aerobic endurance? And he pauses for a moment, and then he says the famous lines, look good naked.
Right.
And so the net result of doing CrossFit, what kind of bodily physique do you attain? Is it good for weight loss? Is it good for optimizing your physical appearance? What are the results?
I think the training makes you strong and able to run and able to get yourself around.
Mm-hmm.
My personal opinion is that when it comes to body composition, that your diet, there's an expression that you can't out-train bad nutrition.
Yeah, no, I love that expression. I think that's a very, very good point to be made. You can't expiate the sins of a bad diet with even enormous amounts of exercise.
Right, and that's part of the sort of Puritan culture of, you know, exercise and diet, where, you know, and this is a very American thing, right, where, you know, it's almost like I've sinned with food and therefore I must, you know, expiate myself with exercise,
mm-hmm.
right, when in fact those lines are kind of skew, right? You train to get fit, to be healthy and strong,
mm-hmm.
so that you can, you know, toss your kids in the air,
yeah.
and, you know, pick up your grandkids, and so you don't need, when you're old, the neighbor kid to help you getting the 5-gallon bottle under the cooler,
mm-hmm.
And for your heart health and your blood for health. And in terms of the looking good naked part, yeah, muscle tone, that's going to do a lot for you, but you have to dial in with your nutrition. And I don't want to say diet, but with your nutrition.
Right.
In order to get to where you want to be in terms of your body composition.
Well, great. I mean, I think this is a real thoughtful introduction to the theme of CrossFit. So what are today's Intelligent Medicine action points? First of all, get the book, read it, digest it, and that is available through the usual sources. It's Learning to Breathe Fire by J.C. Hertz, H-E-R-Z. And how can people find out more about the CrossFit movement? Their websites, their apps? What's the best way?
And also there's a thriving community if you look for Learning to Breathe Fire on Facebook. It's an interesting combination of CrossFit coaches and athletes, deployed military personnel, and some really fierce women you might not want to mess with. We have an amazing community on Facebook that's just taken off. So
great. So like you on Facebook, Learning to Breathe Fire. Okay. And then also CrossFit.org or CrossFit.com?
CrossFit.com and the CrossFit Journal is an excellent resource, and there's years of articles that are exemplary on the CrossFit Journal, and most of them are free.
Okay, so we urge you to push beyond your comfort zone, explore this new exercise modality. At the very least, we want to bring some understanding to you who are observing your kids, your friends involved in this new exercise movement. And any cautions that we suggest people, undertake before they jump into this?
Yes. Master the movements before you go heavy. Learn how to do things properly before you load up the barbell.
And so maybe a little personal attention from a personal trainer, in a small group setting or an individual setting, can help you prepare for the rigors of these classes.
Well, every CrossFit box has something called elements or fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
which is just for beginners who are not even allowed to join everybody else until
okay.
they go through the course of the fundamentals, which is also very good.
So it's like it's a gradual initiation into it. You just don't jump into a
yep.
full bore thing and, risk injury.
Yeah, they teach you how to swing a kettlebell. And I would encourage people who even don't want to get into CrossFit to go and take one of these elements or fundamentals classes at a CrossFit box, because you learn things like how to lift something up from the ground safely, which even if you don't want to become a CrossFitter is, that's an excellent thing to know.
And kettlebells are an awesome workout. It's, I recommend it very highly. Learn how to do it, get a set of kettlebells, and, do the exercises at home because they're really great.
Yep, and if you want to support veterans, there's a veteran-owned and operated business called Mad Fitter that sells kettlebells shaped like grenades called boom bells.
Awesome.
So I always love to support them. Look for boom bells or Mad Fitter online. There's Marines and Air Force guys who are making these things, and they're hilarious, and I love them.
And it's a great way to recycle unexploded ordnance, isn't it?
Well, no, they're sandcast metal. But, they'll give you a little bit of extra mojo for your kettlebell workout.
And they double as IEDs, so they're useful in that sense. All right, great. Thanks very much for joining us, JC, and congratulations on the new book. I hope it gets a lot of traction, and I hope we introduce a lot of people to a new, very, very challenging, but also a very rewarding avenue for greater fitness.
All right, it's a pleasure to be here. Anytime.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.